Hi, I'm Jen, and as an 80s child, my favourite film has to be Grease. Welcome to the Podyssey. Cue the music.
I'm Neil Roger from Mix 92.6 FM. Welcome to the Podyssey, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of the greatest little independent cinema on the planet, the Odyssey in St Albans. In today's episode, you'll hear us talk about our favourite film soundtracks. We'll be looking at some old classics coming up at the Odyssey in the coming weeks, and we'll also end with the usual dreadful impressions. Hope you enjoy. So, welcome to the Podyssey. I'm here with Nick and Roberto, as always. Roberto, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Good, I'm good, thank you very much. Very formal, very good, thank you. Nick, all good?
Yeah, I'm doing well, very well, thank you. Yeah.
Nice. You're going to have to bear with me today, chaps. I flew back from holiday last night and my flight was very, very delayed.
Oh, my God.
So I'm very tired. So there'll be it'll be even looser than usual and there might be the odd wrong buttons getting pressed and stuff like that.
But it's all good.
I'm sure we can live with it.
Yes,
so,
we can.
What we've been watching lately, what have you seen at the Odyssey lately you've enjoyed?
Yeah, I've been seeing quite a few films. I've seen The Fall Guy, which I actually really enjoyed. I remember we talked about that last week. It was kind of a film that did exactly what it said on the tin, but did it really well. And I saw probably one of my contenders for my favourites of the year is a film called Evil Does Not Exist, which is a Japanese film directed by the Drive My Car director. I don't know if you guys remember that film. Came out a few years ago,
yeah,
won the Oscar. And it was a film about a rural village that was going to have a glamping site built on it. And it was kind of like about the conflict between the people who lived there and the site, and it was just very complex and quite emotional. Yeah, I really enjoyed that. How about you, Nick? Anything you've seen?
I really wanted to watch Evil Does Not Exist as well. I was just unfortunately working at the time, and I didn't get to see it there. But I've heard many good things about it. Recently, myself, I've been watching... I saw Furiosa, I enjoyed a bunch. I probably enjoyed it more than Fury Road.
Ooh.
And I couldn't tell you. I think it was just I enjoyed the format a lot more of like structured storytelling instead of maybe just like one wild ride through the desert as Fury Road can be seen as. Like, I enjoyed the performances as well. Anya Taylor-Joy and the little child actor that she had playing her as a young child as well.
Yeah.
Also, Chris Hemsworth just pulls off like one of the best performances he's ever done. I mean, it's just playing as an Australian like demented gang leader, and he's got some really cool bits in it. He like leads a sleigh of motorbikes in front of him as if they're like dog sleds, which I thought was really cool.
That's cool.
Mad Max aesthetic.
Yeah, exactly. That was good. I recently saw Inside Out 2. As well.
Oh, yeah.
I did see that. I enjoyed that. Yeah, the new Pixar film, it's sequel to the original, of course, The Inside Out. I enjoyed it. I would say it's like, it didn't feel as special as the first one did.
Do you think that's because the first one was, I mean, the first one's kind of amazing, right? It's a really clever concept. So I wonder if because you know the concept, it can't wow you quite so much.
It couldn't wow me so much. And, it could have been just the way the film was presented, but Riley now is a teenager, so she goes into puberty and has a lot of different new emotions. They introduce new characters and so on. And a lot of these new characters take over as well, because there's a character of anxiety played by Maya Hawke, and she really just like takes over and she begins to just do some dastardly things with Riley, and you're like, no, Riley, please just don't do this. But it's just like a natural sort of feeling, and they do obviously get to a really nice like conclusion with that. And I think it's also just like for the kids, just me, 30-year-old, then like in a bloody 1 p.m. screening of Inside Out 2. I really enjoyed it though. I enjoyed my animation thoroughly, so I pretty enjoyed that one as well.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing it, because I was just reading out like the new emotions, which is like anxiety, embarrassment, NUI, or boredom, envy. It's like, oh wow, we're getting we're going in.
NUI is boredom, but the way they have that character, it's like, I believe it's a female-led persona, and they're literally like, the character is so bored that they can't be bothered to stand up straight. There's no, like I said, every single shot they're in, they're on their back or just lying like this, because they just can't be like, they're so chillaxed.
Very relatable.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And then when their phone goes missing, they go nuts.
Oh, great.
So, funny enough, I'm keen to see all of the films you've just mentioned there. So, The Fall Guy, I'm a very basic film viewer, as we're finding out. I think The Fall Guy looks absolutely a bit of me.
Get some popcorn, much fun.
Watch Ryan Gosling ping about, watch Emily Blunt make fun of him. I'm all definitely, for that. Yeah. I'm definitely here for that. Furiosa, I think I'm going to try. I didn't love Fury Road.
Yeah, no, neither did I. I didn't love it. I liked it a lot. I just, now when watching Furiosa, making the comparisons, I think I just prefer Furiosa just because of what I mentioned. I felt like there was a bit more of a structure to it. They're also like, it's chapterized throughout the movie. So you'll be like, you know, this is chapter one and then move on to chapter two. So I felt like there was actually a structure to follow. Yeah. In that regard, it was also just like from Furiosa as a child to you know, prior to Fury Road. So it's like a fixed time window where really you can do anything you really want with it, I think.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed the action quite severely. I really like Fury Road and its action pieces and like set pieces, but I don't know, it was just something about it I thought I enjoyed just a bit more than Fury Road.
I saw a comparison that I think is quite apt, which is like Fury Road is kind of like Kill Bill Volume 1 and Furiosa is like Volume 2, and that Volume 1 has like a lot of momentum and it's just kind of constantly go, go, go.
Yeah.
Whereas the second one then like kind of slows it down, is a lot more meatier in terms of like the story and the getting into the characters and stuff.
That also says a lot, which I think is like Volume 2.
Yeah.
More than Volume 1.
But. Do you think that's deliberate? Do you think directors kind of, they've obviously got an eye on maybe a bit of a franchise, or they're not called franchise anymore, they're called like universe.
Yeah. Yeah.
So do you think the first one, they're like, we're going to land with a bang, wow everybody, and then once we've kind of bought everyone's attention, we can start?
I think so. I think possibly, yeah. Because, yeah, I think you can grab them with the momentum and your kind of style, and then, then kind of go more into, like, detail with certain aspects, which is interesting because George Miller is, like, a veteran. He's been directing films since the 70s. But, like, it just seems that Fury Road was such a landmark that then this is kind of such a natural follow-up for him to just be like, okay, now I'm bringing it back again.
And I can't imagine they probably thought they were going to have mad success with Fury Road like they did.
Yeah, it's
which
strange.
Which is why they
no
do
real
have Fury
stars,
Rosa.
Are there? Like, I know.
So Charlize Theron.
But when she was not.
Well, I don't know. I mean, she's. A lot of them. They don't have really a lot of dialogue entirely throughout the film, anyway.
Yeah.
I'd say.
I think they do. I think. Both those actors have done a lot of, like, Tom Hardy as well, had done a lot of, like,
that's
very
right,
well-regarded, critically acclaimed films, but never any, like, major action tentpole blockbusters. So I think that's possibly the reason is why they add such a kind of element to it in those roles.
So I tell you what, we need to move along. We've got a lot to cover in today's pod, but just quickly, what's happened to Tom Hardy? I feel like I've not seen him in anything.
He's too busy being an MMA fighter, isn't he?
He's doing that.
Have you seen that?
Do you know what? Of course he is, actually. Thinking about it, of course he is.
We've got Venom 3 coming up, and if you saw the trailer for that. And then we've also got The Bike Riders, which I'm sure we'll talk more about later. But that is coming out this month, so he's coming back. Yeah.
Okay, I shouldn't worry about him.
Yeah, no, he's all good. Yeah, he has been judo flipping people.
Honestly. Have you not seen that, Neil?
No, I haven't.
There was an article a while ago that he was winning a local, I don't know where it was, but I think it was local to him. It was like a local karate championship.
What a weird day. You turn up, you know, you work in a bank, you turn up on a Saturday to do like a sort of quick local MMA thing at a church hall and you're up against like
that's why they went on strike. he had to go.
And he was using like a bit of an alias as well, I'm pretty sure, or like maybe even he reverted back to his original like name. not stage name. So imagine, yeah, you're like, oh well, I'm gonna get jujitsu'd by Tom Hardy today.
Sorry ref, I just feel the old hamstring going. Yeah. I couldn't take part in this. Chaps, I need to move us along, but first of all, we should say thank you to Jen, our listener, who gave us today's intro. Thank you very much, Jen. Lovely intro. And also, Grease. Thoughts on the film Grease?
I haven't seen Grease all the way through. I've only seen
you
like,
told me this
certain,
off air,
certain sequences.
And I insisted that you said it on air because I think the listeners will be as shocked as I am.
Do you know what? Weirdly enough, recently I've been listening to the Frankie Valli song at the start of Grease. like quite Greece, a bit. Yeah. I quite like it.
Is it true?
Yeah, it really is. It's got some major. If you're walking down the street, it powers your walk up by like 50%. But I should get on it because I have been thinking about getting more into musicals.
Genuinely, it's very good. I really like it, and also I think it's probably one of those that could be seen as a bit naff, but also there's a reason it's still about now. Do you know what I mean? Like if it wasn't good, it wouldn't still be so popular.
It has a semi-timeless quality to it. I'll give it that. And I will say,
I'll give it that.
I don't know. Like the only reason I say that is because also, unlike you, I was brought up with Grease throughout my childhood.
Yeah,
like it was the soundtrack of my life probably till the age of about 7, and it was just because my family were huge fans of it. Every time you see it on like Channel 4 or any TV channel out there, and you'd see it on, you sort of stop and watch it because it just reminded you of something that was like something from the good old days, like back in the good old days. I enjoy it. But I just now, it's like, just now with modern eyes and the new scope, it's just like, why have you got these 40-year-old men playing teenagers? Like, yeah. It's really crazy. But I enjoy the music, and I do think it's a worthy pick of someone's favourite film, potentially, for sure.
Thanks for your intro, Jen. Of what it's worth, I absolutely think it's a fair enough favourite film, even if these two film intellectuals don't. So thanks for your intro. Right, we're going to take a quick break, then we'll be back to talk about some of the absolute old classics that are coming up at the Odyssey soon. So we've actually got a lot of old films coming up in the next few weeks at the Odyssey, which I'm very excited about because, I like an old classic. I tell you what, I know we've got a little list of them. So, Nick, do you want to go first? Tell us about some of the things that are coming up.
Yeah, sure. So we've got many classics. One of my favourites, though, that we are showing on Thursday, the 18th of July, 7:30, is The Warriors. It's a really cult classic movie, although I'd say it's quite popular among St. Albans. It's been requested on Facebook quite a few times by local audiences. There is one guy who just persistently comments every month on our listings, like, when is The Warriors coming out? So I hope you're listening.
Yeah.
You better come with 10 mates.
You've got your way, mate.
But it's also just a really cool, like, 70s throwback. Like, it's all set in New York in the streets, and one gang's on the run from multiple gangs, and they have to get from, like, downtown up to Coney Island. Like, and as they travel, obviously being stopped and constantly like accused of things that happen in it, and it's full of like quotable moments and some great like street scenes, like street violence, like you've never seen it. Honestly, it's a cool
movie.
I'm
gonna come and see that. When's that on?
Thursday the 18th.
I'm going to come and
July.
See that.
Yeah,
I'm trying to take a day off for it. Oh, nice. Lie.
I have seen it before, but I might come and watch it just to refresh my memory. I remember it, I think most distinctly, it's really got almost like kind of a graphic novel vibe to it without actually being adapted. It's got a very like kind of dense world in the background, and the production design is so gritty and
very much,
you know,
so.
Lots
very
of...
Much.
New York City grime.
Yeah, and I love all that. Like, they're always, like, they're just running through, like, really wispy, like, lit streets, so it's just, like, street corners and, you know, that sort of thing.
Old New York is always cool in films. You know, like, before any of us probably were even born, it was apparently, like, an absolute nut bar crime fest with, like, steam coming out of the... Gotham is in the Batman film. So, New York is always cool in those films.
Like puddles, steam coming out like the sewer vents, and then like people with bats like walking around,
and like a midnight skyline on the Brooklyn Bridge,
and everyone who sort of drives around honks each other, goes, "Hey, learn to drive, man!"
Yeah, big yellow taxis, all that.
Yeah, I'm gonna watch that. That's sold.
Brilliant.
Appreciate it. Buy a ticket.
And we should point out to listeners, we'll get a picture of this. Nick is actually wearing a Warriors T-shirt today.
Rapping.
Such is his excitement about that coming up. So maybe you can have a good chat with mysterious Facebook.
Yeah.
Roberto, what else have we got?
We actually do this quite a lot during the summer at the Odyssey, but I feel like it's such a great... In fact, it might be you could consider it the summer blockbuster. It is Jaws by Steven Spielberg. We've got that Sunday the 14th at 12:30.
Now it's
and I've got a soft spot for this film. I mean, everyone does. When I was in primary school, I actually went through like a shark phase, and it was like kind of this battle where I was like, "Dad, I really want to watch Jaws," and he was like, "I don't know if I can let you watch Jaws yet." And
then because you'll never go to the swimming pool again.
Yeah. And I begged him so much that eventually he caved. And I remember just the night I watched Jaws for the first time. It's just you know, magical. You're just like, oh my god, the shark comes up.
Is amazing,
and it really holds up. It really does, just because that trio of characters is so dynamic, and they've got such a great chemistry going on.
And mad bit of trivia, you know, the quote that everybody says from Jaws, "We're gonna need a bigger boat."
Mm.
They don't actually say it. They say something similar. I've ruined this because I don't know the exact word, but basically, the bit that everybody says from Jaws. It's a bit like Play It Again, Sam. They never say that in Casablanca.
Right.
They never actually say we're going to do a bigger boat in Jaws, but it's become the kind of trademark.
It's interesting how that happens, actually, because it's just, I don't know, it's probably just like something to do with human memory, but you just like transplant it with something else and then it becomes a collective consciousness sort of thing.
I was also listening to a rival, far lesser podcast than this one. And John Williams, am I right? John Williams, the composer.
Yeah.
He was on there. And he was saying that when he first wrote, you know, obviously now you can't imagine Jaws without the... That's like almost the star of the film. He said when he first played to Steven Spielberg, you know, Steven Spielberg had been waiting weeks for this kind of what's the shark theme. And he plays it to him and it's basically these two notes. And Steven Spielberg's like, is that it? Have you sent me the whole thing?
Yeah. Imagine that, actually. Yeah, you like get the guy who... he hadn't done Star Wars by this point, but, you know, the guy who later goes on to make such opulent, magical movie themes, and then he sends you the dirt, and you're like, okay.
Yeah, I'm thinking, I could have done this.
You know, but, you know, I guess subtlety is the key, isn't it?
Okay, so Jaws, absolute belter. What date was that again, sorry?
That is the 14th at 14th of July at 12:30. It's a Sunday matinee.
Nice. What else have we got?
Neil, I know you were talking about one just now that you want to kind of pitch to me and Nick, who have not seen it. So we've got this one on the Sunday the 28th at 12:30. What's the film, Neil? I don't know why I've taken hosting duties.
I like it. I like being the bloke just ask the questions. That's way nicer. Right, so The Odyssey is showing Chariots of Fire. If you haven't seen this film, and I'm talking to you two, but also anyone listening, you have to go and see this film. It is an absolute classic. It's fantastic. It's based on a true story of kind of, I'm going to say pre-war, but that might be shown by thickness, but very long ago, Olympians. It's excellent. It's absolutely excellent. And funny enough, talking of soundtracks, because obviously Jaws, huge soundtrack film. Mengelis, I think his name is, the guy who did the Chariots of Fire theme. Presumably, you know the theme.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So.
Dun, 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 dun.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And for a good 15 years, if it came on anywhere at any time, it was almost the law that somebody would pretend to then run into
the
That's the cultural fix of the film. But yeah, so look, I won't bore you too much with this, but Chariots of Fire, well worth a look. British film, absolute cracker. I think an Oscar winner. Great soundtrack, definitely worth a look. And that's my pitch.
I'm sold. You say Vangelis did the soundtrack, because I know he did the Blade Runner
soundtrack. Same guy.
Which is also an amazing soundtrack. I'll go see. Seeing as the theme of soundtracks, I do like a good soundtrack, so go see that. And yeah, I'm quite interested in seeing it, just because I think with all the recent kind of lots of real life stories that have been coming out, I do want to watch kind of more of the classic ones and kind of see how they differ in the filmmaking style. Because I feel like back in the day there was more style, more dynamic filmmaking with those kind of films. I'm not sure particularly
why.
And also,
what I would say for it, at the risk of boring on about this.
No, it's all good.
It's because it was, I think it's an 80s film, maybe early 80s.
Yeah.
Not tons of effect around, so it really relies on human emotion, acting, script, storytelling. You know, because really it's kind of, like steam trains and people jogging all in white with white pencils. You know, like there's not tons going on. So yeah. If you think of like the Fall Guys at one end of a spectrum, this is at the other.
Yeah,
end.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a lovely little film. I say lovely definitely. Little film. It was a huge Oscar winner. But yeah. Anyway, I think worth having a look. And the other definitely, one, I think, before we go on to the next, but the other one is Back to the Future.
We do, yeah.
A lot of people's favourite.
Robert Zemeckis, Back to the Future, which is a film I haven't seen in ages as well, actually. We got that Sunday the 7th at 12:30. I might come and see that just in terms of I want to go through that whole trilogy again because I've still never seen the third one, but I do want to refresh myself on that first film.
Yeah, no, I think I'll join you there because I was saying as well that I've not seen the third one, but that first one and the second one really do stick out, especially the first. You know, I don't think at the time no one had really done a family time travel movie.
Yeah,
where the time machine is a DeLorean. Which is probably one of the most popular cars at the time, right? I'm looking at you, Neil, because you might know. But
I should stress, I was maybe like five, okay. But yeah, but fair.
No, I'm joking. No. But it's a great movie. I mean, if you haven't seen it, watch it. Like yeah. I was actually just saying a minute ago to Roberto that the trailer showed for Back to the Future a few nights ago, and someone actually stood up and took a picture of the title screen because. I don't know, either they were really a massive fan of the movie or, you know, really recommending it to other people.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
It's just a way.
Yeah.
It's just people know, and if they know, they always come watch it. I think it's actually one of the most popular selling films right now.
I was a kid when it came out, and it was, you know, get the violins out, but it was pre-mobiles. That was actually a good thing.
Yeah.
Pre-internet, four channels on the telly, not tons and tons of films. So... culture was a bit more, this is going to sound weird, culture was a bit more homogenised, but kind of in a good way. So when the film came out, like, everybody's family went to see it.
Yeah,
so
yeah
Back
exactly,
to the Future
yeah.
was just enormous one summer. Everyone got skateboards out, everyone started trying to sleep like Marty McFly.
Yeah.
Calvin's and Nikes and all that
stuff.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And Back to the Future, one of them has a Jaws reference.
So it does, yes.
Future.
Jaws 2.
In Back to the Future 2.
Yeah, nice
Jaws 3D.
Spielberg. Yeah. And the shark jumps out at him, and Mike McFly goes, shark still looks fake.
Yeah,
nice. So, yeah, some really cracking old ones coming up there. I'm excited about some of those. Right, we'll take a quick break again, and then when we come back, speaking of the likes of... because Back to the Future, of course, had Power of Love.
Mm.
I don't remember this.
Huey Lewis in the News.
You know one of those ones where there's a film tie-in song and it is just number one?
It was called Back in Time. The Power of Love
Power
was
of
one.
Power of Love, I think, yeah.
And then they did one, though. They did like a tie-in
back
song.
Back in Time. Yeah, I remember it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was in the days when a film tie-in song would just be number one forever. So in my memory, somebody could probably Google this and find out that I'm wrong, but in my memory... as well as everyone being back into Back to the Future. Power of Love was just number one and just played everywhere at all times as well. Speaking of those, just quickly before we go, because we're going to be talking about soundtracks in a minute, driving on the way here, I was mentioning this off air, I was the radio played Love Is All Around, Wet, 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 from Four Weddings and a Funeral, which was number one for... I think Wet, Wet, Wet had to pull it in the end. It was number one for something like 20 weeks.
Yeah.
So the radio, when they used to play charts, had long stopped actually playing it. They're like, yeah, you know what's number one? Forget it. It's been months. And in the end, Wet, Wet, Wet were like, look, people are starting
gotta
to
give
really
someone
hate
else
this
space.
And us now. We're going to have to turn this off, yeah.
So it's still a tune, though.
I agree. You know what? I consider myself a bit of a muso. You know, I like some, I imagine, quite cool stuff. I love that song.
Oh,
never
nice.
Get bored of it.
Good.
Never get bored of it. Right, soundtrack's coming next. Now, as promised, following the last podcast, we're going to be talking a bit about film soundtracks today, and the boys have brought in their top fives to contrast, compare, and for you, the listener, to critique. Okay, so Nick, let's have you first. We'll hear your whole list, and then we can have a chat about it.
Okay, fine. I'm going from 5 to 4 to 3 to 1, and onwards. So number 5, I have The Lion King, which is composed by Hans Zimmer. Number 4, I have La La Land, composer Justin Hurwitz. Number 3, you have Saturday Night Fever, which is the Bee Gees and onwards, a load of various artists. Number two is a tricky one, but I'm going to go with Inception, Hans Zimmer
again.
I know, right? And number one, I mean, if you've been listening, you know it's my favourite film of all time. It's also my favourite soundtrack, which is Cinema Paradiso, which is composed by Ennio Morricone.
Awesome.
What would you like to talk about?
Good list.
Is it good? I mean, honestly, it could have been worse.
I think it's good. I mean, so The Lion King, my little boy, absolutely loves The Lion King. The Lion King gets played a lot in our house. There's some tunes on there.
The original, though, or the new one?
Original.
Yeah. Okay, respect. Yeah, it's 30 years old this year. And there's something to be said about like a lot of it, actually. Like, great songs, like, you know, written by Elton John, Alan Menken. But Hans Zimmer's score is actually what makes it, like, and breaks it. There's the end scene with Simba and Scar. Oh, no, when Simba goes up to Pride Rock. Yeah. And, you know, all the voices that are in there, the choir voices, the African music and instruments, all just really work and mesh together. Oh, no, it's when Simba climbed Pride Rock and there's that, like, huge orchestral vocal choir moment. That is, like, whoa, epic, like, crashing lightning.
Well, like, Disney, you know, it's really admirable and commendable. Disney do a lot of this now, but... Yeah. At the time, the kind of bringing in of the African influencing, that wasn't that common. Do you know what I mean?
No,
normally, if there was somebody, dare I say, if there was a kind of international influence, it was normally a bit of a caricature type thing.
Properly,
respectfully well done.
Oh, no, yeah, it's authentic. And even when they continued on into the musical and on stage now, they do that. They have a lot of, like, African choirs, you know, actors and actresses from... Black UK backgrounds that are playing, like, well, not African roles, but, you know, sort of characters that are mainlined and streamlined in Africa, especially, like, you know, the Serengeti, most of these animals come from. So I just think it's awesome. I think it's epic. It still is one of my favourite films of all time as well, just for the sheer fact that I grew up with it. It's probably, like, 2 months older than me. So I've always enjoyed it. La La Land.
Oh yeah,
I
have a
great connection to that as well. Thought about it. I did think about putting it, but like it's just like I listen to Another Day of Sun quite a lot, but then like some of the other songs I don't listen to as much. But it's still an amazing soundtrack.
For me, City of Stars is the one that does it.
I like that.
Oh yeah,
because it has like such influence of like jazz, big swing bands as well.
And he learned the piano for that. That is
there you go.
Impressive, isn't it? Like. That's impressive.
Do it all, Ryan Gosling.
Yeah.
Not going to lie as well, I was certainly swayed by this choice because recently I went to see the live performance of the whole film.
Yeah. With the orchestra
playing over it. And it was at the Royal Albert Hall. And it was, like, incredible. It was, like, start to finish. They got Justin Hurwitz back, so the original composer. He did the whole thing. And you could tell he was having, like, fun because, you know, those sort of the composers are sort of quite, like, stiff. But he was, like... bouncing his feet and like swinging around with the music and so on. And yeah, I think it has like great influence of like jazz, but also just like big band music and like how they sort of try to present it in the film as well. Because, you know, because he's trying to be a jazz star, but he can only really do like the main musician musician part.
So it's also one of those films that loads of films have good soundtracks. You can't rip the two of them in half. It would be inconceivable to watch La La Land without the soundtrack. Is the film kind of thing.
Yeah,
and just the like actual music that Emma and Ryan sing.
Yeah,
together is great. The drum line, that dum 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 like that whole thing. I love. Like it's like a consistent track through it. Saturday Night Fever. I think less time was spent on this. It's just amazing. You can't stop playing alive.
Great film.
Tap along.
Yeah.
Yvonne Elliman, If I Can't Have You, is on the soundtrack, which is, again, something along the same lines of Grease, where I know that song had been brought up like throughout my childhood. I just heard it and I knew it straight away. Great soundtrack. Movie. It's all right. It's a classic. I recently watched it and I was like, ugh, this is not aged very well. Personally, it's a very misogynistic movie, let's say that.
Oh, no.
Number two, Inception, Hans Zimmer is just one of the most like all-time epic scores. I remember seeing that twice in the cinema and being like astounded, and then hearing the music. It's just like, it goes so well with the action set pieces, and the main track Time is that one that's sort of like, it has a really like conundrum of like speeding up and then slowing down, because some of the instruments slow down while others speed up, and it's like,
it's clever.
It's
stuff,
very clever. It's a very like complex piece of music, but it's so like smooth. And then lastly, Cinema Paradiso. Ennio Morricone is obviously very well known for his like spaghetti westerns and things like that. But this one, I love the movie, and I love the soundtrack. It sounds exactly like what you're walking through when you're watching the film. It's just like this small town, Sicilian village, and the music itself is very like jaunty, but also like, it can break down really well and be emotional when it wants to. And it's just a really great, chirpy, but just like a heartfelt soundtrack. And I think that works perfectly with the movie.
It's a very, very, very good
movie. Did you watch Cinema Paradiso in the end?
I did. I really liked it. Yeah. I get why you love it. I really like it. Yeah. It's almost great. Okay, this is not remotely a criticism. This is actually whatever the opposite of criticism is. I don't know what that word is.
Compliment.
A compliment to the film. It's more about kind of bathing in the vibe of it than it is about the story almost. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
It's like
just being in the world of it. Yeah. It's the lovely thing about that film. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Yeah, I can see why you like it so much.
I've yet to watch it, but it's definitely on my list.
Okay, so great list. Tough act to follow. Roberto, yeah, let's have yours, please.
All right, here we go. Mine's sort of a really haphazard international tour here. So, but here we go. This is in no particular order because I can't do it. But so I've got the Creed score by Ludwig Göransson.
Good.
Which I'll talk about that in a minute because I feel like it might be a bit out of left field. I have got Ennio Morricone's The Good, the Bad and the Ugly. So
second appearance.
Yeah. then I've got Old Boy, the Korean film. By a composer called Cho Young-wook. I'm sure I pronounced that terribly. I'm really sorry.
I think it sounded all right.
Yeah. then I have a score from a film called Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence, which stars David Bowie, and it's composed by someone called Ryuichi Sakamoto. And then my final one, I had to go for a Studio Ghibli film. I had to do it. I couldn't leave it. And it is Princess Mononoke, which is my favourite Hayao Miyazaki film.
Yeah, good list. Niche list, but a good list.
Yeah. I mean, I had to put Ennio Morricone on there. I mean, because I've been rewatching the Dollars trilogy. And even though the Good, the Bad and the Ugly theme is so recognisable, even just throughout the rest of the film, there's so many great... And kind of you were talking about how it can get really emotional. I think he really captures like... It's weird to say, but he kind of captures empathy in his music. Like, he really kind of nails, like, the kind of emotional states of the characters currently. I mean, like, that scene where Tuco's running through the grave and Ecstasy of Gold's playing, you know, the... Because you hear it so much in adverts, I think you almost, like, go, oh, yeah, it's one of those. But then, like, when you see it in the film again, it really, like, rouses you.
It's basically what classical composers, if the likes of Beethoven and Schubert then were born now, it's what... genius classical composers now do films, basically.
Almost. I guess you could liken it to that. And he did like 400 film soundtracks. I know. He's like, you go on his like page, he did so many soundtracks. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So respect.
Very
him.
Good list. I would say less mainstream than Licks. There's a lot of them I've not heard.
Yeah, I mean, I think so Creed I've put on there because so it's Ludwig Göransson, who
good film as well.
He is great film, and he actually did the Oppenheimer soundtrack recently and the Black Panther soundtrack, which you actually just mentioned off air. And this was kind of like one of his first big soundtracks that he did. And it's just a really great example of, he took the kind of inspirational music from the Rocky films and he kind of almost, I don't know if this is correct, but he took that same energy and then he almost added these like medieval instruments. So instead of like one guy fighting for it almost sounds like, even though it is still one guy, it's Adonis. It's always like an army's getting ready, like during that montage where he's fighting, he's training for his fight with Ricky Conlon, I believe, who was played by Tony Bellew. Which it's
right.
Always like a film can really like be unconvincing if they get like real sportsmen in to play these types of roles.
He was good at that.
But he was good.
And also, credit to him, so far, I've not seen him try and appear in like
everything else,
you know. what do they call them? You know those kind of like Craig Fairbus ones there where they're always fighting in Ibiza, like... There's about eight of them. He's not appealing any of those.
He's a foot soldier or something.
Yeah, foot soldier.
He's not.
He's not like, he knows what he is. He's like, I can play a Scouse boxer that is me. I'm not going to now assume I'm going to be in other stuff. Yeah. So credit to him.
Yeah, and then for my next three, I think the main kind of the consistent thing between them all is they all have very pronounced main themes that kind of repeat throughout the film that really like adds to, and they obviously changed the instrumentation for like whatever piece, whatever part of the film it is. Mm-hmm. So this film, Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence, it takes place in like a Japanese prisoner of war camp and David Bowie is one of the prisoners. And the composer of the film actually stars in the film as well as like his kind of, and as the antagonist role, except maybe not because emotions and taboos get explored in this film between like male relationships between men. But you might have heard the main theme if you go and listen to it on YouTube. It's like very... kind of iconic, I'd say. And he did the Revenant soundtrack. You've seen that.
Really
visceral, isn't it? Yeah, he's done a few Western film soundtracks. But he's a Japanese composer, but this film just has, it's just, a very emotional, kind of pronounced soundtrack. Weirdly enough, not like orchestra, it's kind of almost electronic, but the way it's very tasteful, like electronic music. Old Boy, have any of you seen Old Boy?
I've seen Old Boy.
Only the remake.
Oh my god, that actually hit me.
If you should see the looks of disdain I'm getting now. Yeah, okay.
No, it's fine. As long as you, we will rectify that later. Anyway, so the original Korean Old Boy film got like lots of like waltzes, kind of lots of brass instruments, kind of really elucidates like kind of the isolation of the main character in this film. Obviously, if you don't know about Old Boy. Well known for being very violent and messed up.
I was going to say, I think that's what I may remember most.
It is rather great.
Than the soundtrack.
It's a 10 out of 10 for me, Old Boy, and the soundtrack as well.
Okay.
And then finally, Studio Ghibli, the kind of in-house composer there, Joe Hisaishi, he does all of the, well, not all of the films, but he does most of Miyazaki's films. Mm-hmm. And you remember last week when I was talking about Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes having that kind of adventure kind of vibe to it where I, you know, go off on a horse, ride into the open plains. There's something about this soundtrack that not only it captures that, like imagine you're walking down the street, put the soundtrack on, you're on a horseback, you're riding through grassy fields. But also there's a thing I really like where during like a centerpiece scene, you get a vocal version of the main theme and it's like a very important scene of the film, really marks it. I love it when film soundtracks do that. Big orchestra, lots of piano pieces as well. Emotional. That's the key word for me. Very
emotional.
I really
want to rewatch all the Ghibli films now. Especially Princess Mononoke.
They're such a vibe.
I tell you what, chaps, good lists. I have to say that. Very good lists.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Do you have any highlights at all? Just any one or two?
I would say so. I'm from the era where I liked the tie-in ones with the actual. So you guys have gone for the kind of ones that where the music's kind of woven through, which I like. I really like when films like, often the British films, like Trainspotting, like...
Oh, yeah.
Compilations. Stock,
you know, when they kind of use cracking tunes that already exist and kind of tie them in with scenes in the film so you can listen to them standalone.
Right.
And so, yeah, so those kind of ones are always big for me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love those kind of ones,
Guardians of the Galaxy is a good example of that as well, just like...
And
using
also,
music.
I remember when I was... Guardians of the Galaxy, that's a huge one.
Yeah, for sure.
Exactly the same sort of thing. And I do remember when I was young in the 90s, Boys in the Hood, one of my favourites.
Yes.
Everybody had the soundtrack. It was one of those where the film's big and everyone has the soundtrack and the soundtrack's good. So, yeah.
It's a fantastic movie.
Along that line, 8 Mile was going to be a contender.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's basically just a wicked Eminem album.
Literally. Yeah. 50 Cent, all them.
Oh, nice.
Right, chaps. We're coming to the end, unbelievably. I don't know.
It always
sprung
happens.
Up on us. So, just quickly, is there anything else people can... that you want to quickly highlight coming up at the Odyssey the next few weeks?
Mentioned Inside Out 2, obviously. We've got that coming up in July. Almost on the same... not in the same vein. It's probably a much more serious film. But if you're looking for more gang-related stories of, you know, people in organisations, we've got The Bike Riders coming up, which stars Austin Butler, Tom Hardy, as I mentioned, and Jodie Comer.
Which is amazing.
Quite a trifecta of a cast there. You've also got Michael Shannon, Norman Reedus is in it, if you're a Walking Dead fan. But looks to be kind of a, you know, one of those films where it's got a lot of machismo and kind of on the outside, but I think Austin Butler's character very much has a kind of a deep character.
It's like a love
throughout.
Triangle also within there. Within yeah. Like, love triangle between like your gang of friends versus like your
yeah, exactly.
significant other
yeah.
and loving the motorbike gang as well and how you can balance that sort of life.
Yeah, looks to be good.
So. All right, sounds good. We'll look out for it. Any more?
I also doing research for this film the other day. I don't know if you guys have seen this in the program. There's a film called Riddle of Fire coming out. Mm-hmm. I didn't know much about it. I was just kind of looking at it, and I just slowly started doing more and more research for it. I'm like actually quite enamored by this film now. It's a coming of age story about three children who have to get ingredients for their mum's favorite blueberry pie, and on their way encounter witches, fairies, and have to outsmart poachers and huntsmen as well, which is a very strange premise.
The trailer looks cool.
It looks to kind of that kind of almost Goonies vibe with a more surreal element to it as well.
I like the sound of that.
And a sun-soaked color palette.
It looks very interesting aesthetically.
Yeah.
All right, good stuff. So, chaps, the time has come to finish another one. Sadly, listener suggestion this week was to end and say goodbye in the style of a Scorsese gangster film. I think, Nick, you should go first because you got the best kind of name for this. Hey, Nicky the Bell. Hey, Nicky the Hand.
Hey, guys, thanks for listening. Come back next week. That's Scorsese. That's my impression.
That's good.
I feel like I could do an impression of Scorsese than I can hit the characters in his films, but I feel like that'd be cheating. So I'll try and do Bob De Niro here, which is visit the Partisan. No, that's not even Robert De Niro. That's just a random Italian gangster. Sorry.
Like, you're gonna visit the Partisan, okay? You're gonna listen to the Partisan. You're gonna visit the Odyssey.
This is bad.
This is good.
It's the worst one yet. How is that possible?
Hey, thanks for listening. Make sure you keep listening. Be ashamed if something will happen to you, like if you stop listening. That'd be a real shame. So keep listening to the fantasy. Right, apologies as always.
The gang would hire you instead of me. And Nick, I don't think.
Yeah. I'm going to be the gang member who eats Fox's Viennese Wells. Panda.
Right, thank you so much. Say goodbye, chaps.
See you later.
Goodbye, everyone.
Thanks, all.